Hey everybody, this is Justin Case, and welcome to another episode of Case in Point. This is episode 47, and I have a very special guest tonight, in studio guest, my good friend Ben Stape. You've seen him quite a bit on Twitter, on our Twitter account interacting, because we don't like Facebook, so we spend our time on Twitter. And how you doing, Ben?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
So finally in your woodshed.
Yes. Woodshed full of toys and guitars. Yeah, so it's been a little while since I've been on scheduling and things of that nature. And so we're going to kind of have kind of a music-focused episode. So you folks who don't really like that kind of stuff, we're not going to get too nerdy on you guys. You know, this isn't going to be, we're not going to be talking about Air Supply or the Carpenters. So rest assured, we're not going that direction.
80s music probably will come up.
See, now if you like 80s music or Alice in Chains, like early 90s stuff, that's definitely probably going to enter the mix. So probably as prog as we're going to get is Dream Theater and or Queensryche. That's got to come into the picture because Ben's a huge fan. So what I want to say real quick is we got some cool developments for the podcast happening, and I just got a deal working with a magazine coming up. We're going to be advertising in there, so that'll be great, half-page ad. And so I'm really excited about that. It's going to be, it's called It Came from the 80s, and I'm working that out. So I'm trying to get some more exposure for the show, and so that means I'm going to be upping my game as far as episodic content and just getting regular episodes out there like I always say I do, and sometimes I kind of drop off. So going to put some steam in my stride and keep things going, and I'll have Ponch back when he's available, and it's pretty cool. So Jody's really busy in the summer times. He's got a lot of different things he's ping-ponging around on, so he'll drop in occasionally so when he's available. So probably around, I don't know, probably fall, holiday time frame, both guys will be regularly available. And Ben, invitation's always open to you. You want to come on over, we could do movie commentary.
Sure.
Do whatever. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'm all for talking about everything and anything. I you know, I have opinions like everybody does, and they're probably wrong half the time, but I'm totally down for chatting.
Well, and opinions are never right anyway.
That's very true.
So it's right to the person that's saying it. That's about it. Hence, that's why we have politics, right? Anyway, which we don't talk about in the show. Just want to reiterate that. Yeah, I just want to give a quick shout-out to some of the friends of the podcast. Some of those guys, they have a heavy Facebook presence. And as I previously explained, we have a presence on there, and I will be trying to get more content posted on there. We do have a website. I don't have it totally mapped out, everything mapped out yet, but that's going to be something we're going to be all hooked in. We're going to have all the various webs all hooked together in this giant Shelob web, if you will, and it's going to be great. That's for you Lord of the Rings fans out there.
Nice pull.
Thank you.
That's not 80s, though. That was written way before then.
You know what? That's okay.
I'm good with it.
Okay. technically, you had wasn't the Rankin Bass Hobbit movie, wasn't that? That was like 1980, wasn't it?
You know what? I can't, you know, I was so young when it came out.
Me too. I don't.
I didn't look at the
laser disc.
That's true. It did have laser disc. Yeah. And there was another one that they had done that was the Return of the King, that was the same style of animation for it.
Yeah, but Ralph Bakshi had pulled out at that point. He was the guy that did the first Lord of the Rings, which is what Peter Jackson pulled a lot of his influence from. But, well, we're going to, real quick before we get into stuff like that, I got off track, and I want to just tell you guys that some cool podcasts that are out there. We have the Element of Surprise with Chadwick Suett, if I could talk right tonight. And we also have the McSauce podcast with Ian Paul and Matt. We have Fireside Chat with Ryan McCormick. And I'm looking to flange up with all three of those gentlemen, by the way, all three shows, to try and get some more kind of crossover episodes going on. I think that's so much fun, and I really want to do that again. And you know, I look forward to that. Our Twitter page is blowing up, and you know, it's like I keep getting more followers daily. I get more Twitter followers for the podcast and also my personal page. If you want to follow us on any of those, at Vandura 81 is my personal Twitter account, and at Kitcar 83 is the podcast Twitter handle. So if you want to give us a follow on there, we'd appreciate it. Give us a little feedback on the show. If you don't want to, that's cool too. You know, we just want you to listen. So, I'm going to have to make a list of some of the other podcasts that, I've kind of become friends with. We keep getting so many more invites. Hope this finds you well. Those guys are awesome. I talked to those guys on Twitter, and funny dudes. Go check out their. They had an episode where one of the guys like gave off. He gave off his friend's. He read off his friend's social security number on the podcast. He goes, "Go ahead, take whatever you want. There's nothing in there." So that won me over when I heard that episode.
It's all on the dark web now, anyway. It doesn't matter.
The dark web. So at any rate, to those that I missed, I apologize because I worked overtime tonight, so I'm a little kind of, you know, flying by the seat of my pants. So. So, you know, it's funny because we're trying to get this show set up, Ben, beforehand, and, you know, I got this iMac that I bought and this, you know, Logic Pro X program. It's like $250 and it doesn't even, you know, and I have to rely on my old Audacity program. It's freeware and it works great.
And it's on a PC.
And it confirms, you know, to me that Apple products are not my friend, and it probably knows that.
You will be assimilated at some point.
Resistance,
I'm sure,
is futile. Yeah. So drop your shields, you know. But anyway, yeah. It's going to be kind of a loose set of topics tonight, but I know we're going to get musically inclined here, folks. So, Ben, I want to ask you about, you know, one story you told me a long time ago is you lived in Seattle and you were a musician in Seattle.
Well, actually, I lived in Bellingham, which was like 4 hours away from Seattle. So this is when I was really young. So I kind of got a flavor for what was going on in the late 80s, early 90s, because we'd go back and visit some family friends up there. What the music that I was playing and the style that I played was definitely influenced by the Seattle grunge scene. Metallica obviously was a big thing during the late 80s and 90s. Queensrÿche became kind of my number one band just for the style of music, the intricacies that they do. And I know a lot of people, they, you know, prog rock genre of things, to me stood out a little bit more than the, you know, the more simplistic music that you could get into. You know, there's a lot of bands like Nirvana and the punk music that kind of came out. And I gravitated more toward the prog stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So at the time that I was doing music, it was like 99 through like 2006. And the music industry has definitely changed a lot from, you know, when you listened back then in the 80s and 90s. It was definitely about, you know, getting signed to a contract and then, you know, getting your name put out there. And that's when you knew you made it. And now it's all about getting your music out there, you know, on the web or wherever you can push it out.
Streaming, Spotify, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I still have yet to set that stuff up, even for a lot of the music that you and I have created. I want to get that more out and more prevalent because we've gotten a lot of good feedback. At least I think we've gotten a lot of good feedback on some of the stuff that we did.
Oh, yeah.
And I have a lot more, I think, to share with people that are interested in the kind of style of music that I write.
Absolutely.
So, but I do have to say that, Paul McGinty, I want you to put that video out there.
Yes, come on, man.
I don't know why you're waiting. Your dying fans are pleading for it. In fact, I'm wearing your McSauce, you know, podcast shirt here today just to try to, you know, get you more influenced so that you know that, hey, I'm serious about this. I want that video. I want your dying fans to know how much you, like, rock that stage.
We'll get a... Do you want me to take your picture and put it on?
You're threatening him with a good time if he sees that shirt come up on the Twitter.
I'll let him sign my cleavage if he would put enough.
Oh, that brings up another memory. Have I met my wife? Well, we won't get into that one though.
Yeah. So it's funny because you had told me this story once about how you auditioned for Limp Bizkit.
Oh, you're going there. Oh, wow. Yeah, I did. They were looking for a replacement because Wes Borland left the band.
I remember
that. I'm really talking about this. I can't believe it because this was one of those times in my life where I was like, hey, you know, I'm just trying to get into the business, right? I'm trying to find my way in to, you know, make some noise or at least get noticed. And they had auditions. I think they had like 50 different places they were going, and it was, I don't know, like February time frame. It was super cold outside.
Yeah.
And they had us standing in line at like 6:30 in the morning before Guitar Center.
Oh, wow. I didn't know it was that early. Yeah.
Yeah. And they had like 100 people could sign up, and they wrote your number down on your hand. And then once they hit that number, they were sending people away. So yeah, I did. I auditioned out, which was, that was interesting alone itself. You know, you had to sign the whole contract. Your hands are frozen. They're like, okay, sign this piece of paper saying that anything you say and do, they can take it and, you know, use it, or, you know, you can't claim any kind of royalties or rights, or, you know, you can't use it for your own, you know, it's solely in Limp Bizkit's, and all the members of the band that were in it at the time had rights to everything. So they were shooting video in there too for the people that were going through.
Yeah. But why would they shoot video when it's just an audition?
You know, I kind of asked that question myself. I didn't actually see any of it come out, and out of the 50 different places, it could have been maybe they were reviewing some of the people that showed up to play.
Oh, that would make sense. Cause
yeah.
But you said that Fred Durst was rapping, doing the rap hands, the rap metal hands.
Oh, yeah, he was there. He was getting into it. I didn't expect him to actually be in the area that they were having people try out.
Well, but, I mean, it's a bigger city, so, I mean, it's...
Well, because they had...
It's the West Coast.
Right. Well, they had the tour bus outside.
Yeah.
And when they kind of started shuffling everybody in, the band members weren't in there, right? So they had people go in. You had maybe a minute to play one of your own songs, and then they boot you out. So they were trying to get people through. And I think after, like, the second person that came out, the studio executive came out and was just totally upset because no one had their guitars in tune that were coming through already. And he was like, you guys got to have your guitars in tune before you come in here, right?
Didn't he get a bunch of tuners out and stuff?
Oh, it was madhouse. Everybody's buying tuners. It was like, you know, fire sale on tuners in Guitar Center. Like, with all the people that were, like, everybody was just, oh, man, okay, well, you know, if I'm going to try out for Limp Bizkit, I better, you know, buy a tuner.
I better give up my, well, you had a number, I guess, so you're okay, but.
Well.
How fast were they going through the people? You said a minute per. So.
Yeah, it was really, actually pretty quick.
60 seconds.
I was shocked. One person, I remember this distinctly because the manager guy came out and he was asking for, like, a napkin. There was blood all over his hand. I guess somebody was going for, like, shock value, right? Like, how crazy can I be when I go and try out? So he came out and, you know, he's trying to wipe the blood off
his
hand.
That's disgusting.
Well, you know, people try to get noticed however they can. And I think this was just that guy trying to, you know, make some kind of impression on him, which was...
We need to tell you, sir, that, you know, Wes Borland, he used fake blood. I don't know. I know he had all the weird kabuki stuff he'd wear, but it was like, I know you guys like Gene Simmons and all that, they use like fake blood capsules and stuff. I mean, it's like you don't really have to lacerate yourself when you're doing an audition. They don't care.
They don't.
And
maybe
bloodborne pathogens might be a concern at that point. So did the guy sign a release for getting injured on the job that lasts 60 seconds, you know, just for an
audition? Get insurance.
Yeah. So it's funny that I got laughing. I think you told me that story like 10 years ago, and it was like, I've known you since 07, like 2007. It's been that long.
It's been a bit, yeah.
It might have been late 06, maybe.
I think it was probably 07. I was talking to one of my other coworkers at the time, and he had said that, oh yeah, there's this guy that's got all these posters of like Steve Vai and stuff in his office. And I'm like, oh, there's a guy I definitely have to meet. Right.
Cause
you know, people that like music, I'm totally for meeting, talking to, and collaborating with, right? I mean, it's one of those lost arts, I think, that people get to where, you know, they want to do their own thing, and that's great, and I appreciate that. Sometimes collaborating with people, you can really come up with some really cool music, too. But yeah, it was 2007 for sure.
Yeah, so it's been a long time, man. Wow. Yeah, because I think it was a while before we actually got to jam out, though. Because we were both in different houses, for crying out loud. And I think even... Okay, I had been in my old house. I had been in it for probably about a year. And then you and I met. But it was a while until we went and actually got a chance to jam out, even at that. In fact, I think the last time you were at my house was... Wasn't it like 2010?
It's been a while.
Isn't that sad?
It's very sad. Yeah. Oh,
man. Because we were talking about Knight Rider. Like Jan Hammer and stuff. Yeah, because I had that Miami Vice soundtrack. And you're like, hey, that's awesome. I got to get a copy of that.
I love that soundtrack.
Oh, it's so great. And I mean, and nowadays you can just stream it. I mean, music's everywhere now.
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
You can just go on YouTube and, you know, it's like, it's just, it's kind of like open season now, you know, and I'm not going to say that it's necessarily a good thing, but all the money's in the merchandise now and in the ticket sales. And I'm a regular listener of like the Eddie Trunk, you know, highlights at least. I don't have Sirius XM, but they post the stuff on YouTube like the next day. And they've got some of those like metal highlights channels and stuff, and it's like the stuff he talks about in there is great because it's exactly kind of the truth of what's going on. And it's the money's in the merchandise and in ticket sales. And, you know, and the thing is, a lot of these bands, too, that were big in the 80s and stuff, you got like Warrant and Rat, and you go through the whole cadre, and they're on like these big festival things where they have to have like 15 bands just to draw a house.
I think that goes to say with that that change in the music industry itself and how it's not about getting signed anymore. A lot of these great bands are still out there and they're still making music. And a lot of the ways to catch them is just by following them on Twitter, you know, going online and actually seeking them out anymore. I don't think radio stations really focus on some of the, you know, the wider, broad type of music that's out there that you can still get, or even some of that up and coming stuff that we were talking about earlier tonight, before the podcast. Mark Tremonti, you know, he's got 3 solo albums out, and, you know, Hate or Like Creed, however you liked, that guy has really come a long way in his own right, and you don't hear it on the radio. You won't hear it.
And that was the thing, you showed me that video before we were doing this, and it's like the crowds he was drawing. Oh, that's why, because he's in Germany, where they, you know, Europe, Asia, they still like good music. The States is on their own.
Yeah, it's almost like you...
it's just corporate garbage.
I don't know if you... It's the stuff that they think people want to hear, you know?
But they're clueless. These are the same people that run the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is a joke.
Yeah, they've got a... I don't know. I don't know what's going to, you know, make the difference. I know things usually go in cycles with music. But it's definitely...
But it never went away.
It's sad, right? I mean, there is some really good music out there that's just getting absolutely no airplay.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what band it was. I think they paid like $8,000 to have their single played on the radio, right? They paid this guy just to go out there and do it. And because people heard it once, people were calling in and wanting to hear it again. And that's how they got signed to a label.
Yeah.
Which now is like... You get signed and it's not, okay, we're going to pay for your studio time. It's, we'll help get your merchandise out for you, but you're going to make your money, like you said, you know, doing touring or, you know, the downloads that you go and you buy, which is why, you know, for me, if you hear music you like, definitely buy it.
Absolutely.
Because it's supporting them and it's supporting what they're doing.
And even more, buy it from the website of the artists themselves if it's possible. You know, I mean, a lot of, I will go to, like, if it's a Steve Vai thing or Malmsteen or whoever the, you know, the artist is, like, I think, who was the last band I checked? I want to buy, it might even have been Dream Theater, but it was like they just send you directly to Amazon or iTunes or, you know, Amazon Music or whatever. And the, you know, the thing is like, I do one thing I do like about I'd rather have them get direct the most money they can because it's their product. But the one thing that is nice, you know, and this isn't an Amazon plug. They don't need any more plugs. They already rule everything anyway. But at least in the music sales, it's like if you buy a CD, you'd have the auto rip feature.
Yeah.
You know, if it's an album that the digital exists in their library, that you can automatically have the music and you still have a physical copy coming to you in the mail. You know, I mean, that's the best of both worlds. You know, I don't think CDs are ever going away. I really don't, because they would have gone away by now.
It's the tangible part, right?
Yeah.
That people want to have.
Which would make sense with the merchandise.
Right.
They still want to hold it in their hand.
Yeah, what happens when, you know, Apple gets hacked, which eventually, sooner or later, it will.
Yeah.
Right.
The cloud and everything get compromised.
Your, you know, account gets stolen or whatever, you know, hacked, stole, you know, whatever they do now to try to protect it.
Yeah.
You know, there's always somebody with a golden key. And someone's going to want to make money sooner or later. But, you know, to me, it's almost like DVDs. I still have some audio tapes. Can I say audio tapes? Am I dating myself on that, I think?
Hey, we talk about 80s, so it's all good.
I still have audio tapes. And to me, there's something nice about actually having it in hand, right?
Hey, cassettes are back in, man.
Records are still back in.
Yep, so
there's
Polaroids.
A vinyl, yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It's the younger generations that are digging it. To them, it's like, you know what's funny, though? It's like, you know, it's like, I never thought, like, a Victrola was cool. I didn't think 8-tracks were cool, you know, but then the generation that's, you know, after us is like, wow, cassette tapes. This is, like, some magical thing. It's like, if you say so, it's fine, you know. There's a fascination there, and it's like, I don't know what it is. I honestly don't know what it is. I don't... Someone obviously, you know, I'd be talking out of my rear if I said I had an answer for even what I thought is driving that interest. But maybe there's other people listening that would know. And feel free to comment if you want to pipe in on that on our Facebook page, Twitter page, whatever. It's like, I mean, it's just fascinating to me. And, you know, because it's like... Remember in the mid-2000s, we had like a kind of a, like people were trying, 70s rock was trying to make a resurgence, and people were, young kids were wanting to play like Jimmy Page stuff, and they wanted to play Led Zeppelin stuff, and, you know, like vinyls came back out, but like people were talking about like, you know, some of the like 70s crap, and, you know... It was just really strange because when that happened, they weren't talking about Deep Purple. They weren't talking about Rainbow. They weren't talking about the Michael Schenker group. Or, you know, Led Zeppelin was at the forefront of that. And maybe Aerosmith to a small degree. But it almost seemed like they only... That resurgence of 70s rock was only for a few groups. You know? And I think... I can't even think who else besides Led Zeppelin was part of that. I don't know, because for a while there was like circa 2005.
Well, they had, what is it, like Cream?
Yeah.
You know, with Eric Clapton.
Right.
They were doing a lot of kind of the heavier rock stuff.
Yeah.
It was also time for disco, right? So I kind of look at like nowadays when I'm comparing, it's like, okay, yeah, there's hip hop. There's, you know, the stuff that, I mean, because of my age, obviously I'm not listening to it as much. But, you know, there's still a mix of what's standing out and what's not standing out. And I keep thinking, okay, rock's going to come back. And then I'm like, well, wait a second. Rock is actually still here. You know, it never really went away.
It's just not in the 50 states.
Right. And it's not prevalent on most of the stations. They'll play, you know, Godsmack. They'll play Avenged Sevenfold. You know, the bigger names out there. But they're not, like I said, we weren't taking advantage of the stuff that's underground. And so I guess, you know, relating back to the 70s, you know, there was still what was becoming rock music. In fact, I think Great White, mm-hmm. They were in the later 70s, and they were playing a completely different style of music, and then they kind of got into that blues rock form in the early 80s, and then they kind of made their surgeance, you know, playing that kind of stuff. So I think
it's funny, too, conversely, a band like 38 Special was playing, like, 70s, late 70s rock, or maybe like 1980. And then when the commercial hair metal stuff started happening, or rock changed to more of an 80s sound, they tried to get in on that, and they actually sounded pretty good. I was like, that's just me, though, because it's like, I like more of the straight-ahead 80s type of grooves as opposed to the 70s stuff. To me, a lot of those bands, it's not my generation, it's not my era. You know, it's just the production styles of that time don't do it for me. The music for me sounds very, like, a prime example would be the Kiss solo albums. Or the Kiss studio albums are so bad from the 70s. But you listen to Kiss Alive 2, Kiss Alive, Kiss Alive 3 or whatever, it's like, well, Kiss Alive 3 is awesome anyway because Bruce Kulick's in the band. So, and, you know, they had a better sound in the 80s anyway, but their 70s live stuff was so great. It was raw. It was like, this is awesome.
I think that's what's also missing in the music industry, right? You're not getting that raw sound where people are going in and in the
you can
early
hear the amps distort, you
right? I think you get some of that in that older recording style too. It's not all straight digital, you know. You're getting that reel to reel for the bass and the drums. You get that warmth out of it. You're getting a lot more of that tube sound instead of everything being digital. So you're getting kind of some of that rawness.
Which is funny because, it's like even the modules that they use for recording, like ribbon mics, those are tube, right?
Yeah.
And you know, and that's got a lot to do with it, but like, and those have been around since the 50s, if I'm not mistaken. But it was like, you hear a song like Stranglehold, the studio version of that is great. You know, it was out in the 70s, but that's one of the songs that stands up. That was good. Bohemian Rhapsody is like amazing for a 70s song. It has just great production. All the audio is very clear on it. It's just very, it sounds awesome. I mean, those Vox amps that Brian May was playing and that awesome guitar that he, you know, him and his father made that. They used a fireplace mantle for the wood on the body and everything, and kickstand off a, you know, a dirt bike.
Yeah, I think they're almost kind of like the pioneers too, of some of the stuff that bands nowadays have done.
They were using
right?
different gear, and they had a different sound as a result of it.
And they mixed everything right, yeah, with different sounds. I guess when I'm not mixing in the studio, but the different sounds that they would bring to the table for some of the songs, right? They weren't just straight, okay, it's guitars, drums, and bass and singing, right? They had a piano. I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody, you take a look at that song and it's very eclectic almost when you listen to it, right?
Yeah.
And everybody loves that song. Nowadays, you're getting the, you know, kind of, forgive me for the people that really are into the music nowadays. I'm sounding like my dad when I was his age, right? You know, it's missing some of that. It's so digital, it's so formatted, it's so strict on what it is and how it's produced. It doesn't have that vibe to it. It doesn't have that, you know, that heart, I guess is the best way for me to say it.
The freaking auto tune. They need to take that, throw it in the garbage. I am so sick of that crap. And it's to the point to where it's considered normal. It was an error that was made by a producer. That's the urban myth, if you will. But it's like Cher is the one that was first started using that as far as from a production technique in and of its own.
Oh, was it that If You Don't Believe Live After Love or something? Even yeah.
I can auto-tune here. Even that's what it said.
hey, careful now. They use that in Cochise from Audio Slave 2 at the end of that song.
Oh, really?
He was smapping his throat.
I got it from Jim Carrey.
Oh,
He was there promoting his parody of the Black Swan.
That's funny.
It was creepy, but it was hilarious. He put on the whole Black Swan getup and everything with the eyeshadow. Oh my gosh, it's so funny. But well, that was the thing though. Is like Pink Floyd stood out. Like their stuff from like Dark Side of the Moon and on was very much. It was very much Dave Gilmour's show.
Oh, absolutely.
And he, I'm sorry, folks, but he improved the sound of that band tenfold when he took the reins. Because not only is he a fantastic vocalist, guitar player, songwriter, but he moved that band forward.
I would agree with that. I still listen to, you know, some of the earlier stuff. My wife and I, we like a lot
of
it.
Are you into like the Sid Barrett stuff? The tripped out druggy trip LSD stuff?
You know, some of it's actually kind of just mellow to listen to. You know, I'll be honest with you. You know, if I'm in the mood to just kind of unwind and just kind of, you know, zone out, I definitely, you know, I'll throw that music on. You know, I still go back to some of the favorites, though, like Shine On You Crazy Diamond.
Oh, yeah.
But that stuff after Sid Barrett, but written about Sid Barrett, right? So... The Wall is a great album. It's a great concept album.
Video's kind of freaky because the guy shaves his nipples. But
it's art. But I guess to your point, you know, he definitely had a vision for what he was doing, and this is my opinion. And he definitely brought stuff to the table and influenced them in a different way than what was going on when Sid Barrett was in the band, for sure. One of my favorite guitarists, I think, kind of from some of the articles I've read, Chris DeGarmo from Queensryche, he had definitely a big influence from Pink Floyd, and you can tell in some of his style and the way that he approached writing music.
Yeah.
Which I have an appreciation. Obviously, I'm a huge Queensryche fan. Chris DeGarmo, for sure, with his writing style, and I don't even know where I was going with this comment. I just lost it, but.
Happens. I do it all the time. Don't worry. But
to me, what I like about the Pink Floyd stuff is the approach that they take and the headspace that they create. And I'm going to quote Chris DeGarmo on that because he was all about creating headspace with the music, right?
Yeah.
It's an escape. It's a way for you to communicate something or feel something. And I think a lot of that's also lost in some of the music nowadays. There's an emotion behind it that you're trying to communicate through it. And it's becoming almost a lost art in some ways.
You know, and it's funny too, because it's like a lot of the guitar hero guys, I guess, I hate that term, but that's what people call them. But, you know, you got the solo guitar artists that kind of moved on from the 80s. Like, because I mean, you got like Steve Vai. He was in David Lee Roth's band and Frank Zappa's band. The David Lee Roth thing really is what took him over the edge. As far as
I'm talking about that Yankee Rose.
Yes, right. yeah, little bit higher. Here's your national anthem.
Hey, I still like that song. I listen to it.
Steve Vai doesn't like, or no, it's just like Paradise. He got sick of playing.
I could see that.
Yeah,
I could see that one.
Yeah. I liked it for my own reasons though, because my brother and I saw the music video when we were five, because the album came out in 86. That was off the Skyscraper. No, wait, was it Skyscraper? Yeah, that was the...
Yeah.
Yeah, oh man, so good. That and Eat 'Em and Smile, just...
What's really interesting is you're bringing up, you know, when you said videos, when MTV came out...
Yeah, that catapulted everybody.
Well, it gave a different platform for that music to come out. And I think also that's another thing that's kind of missing... for some of the rock music, because, you know, obviously I'm a rock fan, mm-hmm. is they don't have that kind of platform anymore. MTV showing, reality TV shows.
Well, in the real world is to blame for that. That's when they turn it into a bunch of reality TV.
So your platform is gone at that point, right?
It's gone.
So
yeah, how are you? Let's go watch Daria.
How are you getting exposure?
Headbangers Ball.
And sure, you know, who you know, in their teen years wouldn't love to see, you know, Warrant's Cherry Pie or, you know, some of the videos they were, you know, putting women on there to try to get the attention, but
it works.
The music itself, I think, you know, people think of the 80s, it's hair,
dude,
it's makeup.
Uncle Tom's Cabin, what an awesome tune.
Oh, it's amazing.
That's better than any of the other stuff that was on MTV.
The acoustic part, I don't even know if they play it on the radio when they play the song, but there's an acoustic part at the beginning of it that Jenny Lane's cousin or brother-in-law or something that played that acoustic guitar.
Wouldn't
on there.
Surprise me.
I'm like, man, that is killer. And then it just leads right into that song. But yeah, a lot of the music itself, I think, kind of gets overlooked for the maturity and the technique that people used back then when they're the guitar players, right? Because a lot of bands had one guitar player. They didn't have two. So that guitar player really had to stand out and know what he was doing. And not have like a studio that overlays and overdubs and overdubs, right?
Well, this is what I had found out recently about them, was that Eddie Trunk, I believe it was Eddie Trunk that said that, like, the two guitarists in Warrant, I think it was, who are those guys? Like, Jerry Dixon was the bassist. Who were the two guitarists in that band?
The one that stands out to me is Joey. He was the lead guitar player.
Right.
He shared lead, I think, with the other gentleman, but Joey was the one that stood out to me the most. I'd seen a...
He said that those guys weren't really that great at guitar players, and they got studio musicians to play that stuff, and then eventually they got better as players.
Really?
That's what he said. Well, I did not know that.
It doesn't really surprise me. Another story like that was U2 when they got... I don't even remember what I was reading, and I could be wrong on this, but I'm going to say it just because, you know, I'm not a huge U2 fan, but
I like the Live at Red Rocks album.
Bono couldn't really sing, but they needed a singer, right? So
did he have a PA system?
Can I bring my own PA?
He got Ozzy.
It's a guitar amp.
He got Ozzy. That's how Ozzy got in. How David Lee Roth got in Van Halen. You know, it's like
here's
because they had equipment.
I got equipment. I'm coming over.
Let's rock of a paycheck. Went down to the pub and got smashed. I got a bottle of cologne to cover up my breath, and I gave $50 to my mom. Or something like that.
Nice. Yeah, you know, I think back in the 80s, it was a lot of instances where things shouldn't have worked and things did work, and it was by chance, right? And some of the bands that came out of it, I think, were underrated. And some of the musicians, I think, were kind of underrated at the time.
They were very good at faking it. Like the record companies and the production of the videos were very good at faking it. And because the thing is like, if you were a teenager or particularly a teenage girl and you were really had the hots for like some of the guys that were like front men and, you know, just band members in general, there's a ton of groupies and stuff.
Kip Winger.
Thanks to the 70s.
You love Kip Winger?
Kip Winger, yes. Metallica's Dartboard.
It was almost like a ballet, I think, in most of his videos. He was in kind of dancing around like a ballerina.
Yeah, you got the whole Billy Squire thing going on. You have the pink leotard or whatever.
The shirt with the cut off that's halfway down his shoulder, right?
Yeah. But it was.
But think about the guitar player, though. This is what I'm saying. The underrated guitar players or musicians in that band, Reb Beach, right?
Dude, Reb Beach is freaking insane.
He's amazing.
He's
freaking amazing, but you don't hear about those kind of people, you know, like, oh, the hair band, Winger, oh, you know, it's Winger, man, it sucks.
That's ignorance. Why don't you guys learn a little something?
But it's
dig into the catalog a little bit.
I think that gets to the whole, you know, radio station playing what people think is popular, what they think that they want to hear, right? And a lot of people do listen to music because it's enjoyable. It's something that they don't have to think about, and it gets in the mood, right? It's that emotional part of it, and I think real musicians, true musicians that deep down that study it, that get into it, they go back and they take a look at it and go, man, these people were well at their craft and what they were doing and how they approached it.
Yeah.
Rat, there's always room for Rat. Warren DeMartini, I think, is another guitar player that, to me, stands out from the 80s that was just amazing, and he didn't get enough credit, I think, even now. I think, well, is he doing music still?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. He always will be. I don't know that Rat's going... Stephen Piercy is not in the band. It was so off and on with them. I think the Infestation was the last album they did, right? Wasn't it? It was that album from, what, 2007 or 2008? And it was a pretty heavy album. I mean, it sounded amazing. It was the best album they ever put out as far as the post-80s age. And... Now, Stephen Piercy's not really a singer per se.
Oh, most 80s musicians, singers, they wreck their voice.
Right, but if you ever listen to the Rat stuff, they always harmonized his vocals. They always harmonized them. They layered them because they tried to do that album in the like 1999 era. There's a guy, a producer named, or he's like a music guy. His name's John Kolodner. I don't even know if he's around anymore, but he was. He had this thing going on where he would pick these '80s bands that he thought still had a chance of getting a gold record, and that was. I remember reading it in Metal Edge, and he's like, "I want at least. I think some of these guys can at least get back to like gold record status." And that was still, again, when selling CDs or albums was still making you money.
Yeah,
but the thing is like, there was that album that there's a crap album. The first song was okay, but I had watched there was this show that was on I think it was the USA Network or it was FX. I don't remember. This one, cable was huge. And late 90s. And there was a show with Ahmet Zappa and Dweezil Zappa. And they had a music show or comedy music type thing. I don't remember what it was, but my brother would know. I should just ask him, but or you could just Google it. But it was like they would always have a band playing at the end of the show. And it was cool because Dweezil Zappa would jump in and play guitar because Dweezil Zappa is an amazing guitar player. You know, in fact, he still tours constantly. The Zappa Plays Zappa.
Yeah, I was going to say Zappa Plays Zappa. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing his dad's music, you know, and everything. So it's like, who was. Frank Zappa was the kind of guy that, I mean, he's so eccentric and everything, and like Rolling Stone magazine would never touch him, you know. And, you know, which is like, and he didn't want them, you know. It's like, I remember Steve Vai was talking about, like, you know, Frank Zappa was like, screw those guys, because they, you know, maybe they approached him, they wanted to do an article on him. He's like, I'm not interested in being on the cover of your magazine, you know. And, you know, like him or love his music, it's or hate it or whatever, because it was different. But the thing was like, I can appreciate that defiance against the commercialization of music. You know, he's an artist.
Yeah.
And you got to respect that. And, you know, it's any interview I've seen Frank Zappa on, I've been very impressed. Just, you might not, you know, always agree with someone's opinion, but you got to respect them for knowing what their position is and why. They're not just running their mouth like an idiot with nothing to back it up.
Yeah.
Or at least have a solid foundation for why their opinion matters to them, you know. So he's one of those people. So it's like, I don't know, I guess you don't see that anymore. And music's such a hard thing these days to especially to get you like younger people involved in. Like, you know, it's like, me personally, I mean, you and I are writing stuff, and we're constantly trying to. I mean, we're not even trying; we're doing it. But it's like we're the kind of people that have to carry the torch, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have to. I mean, I'm not saying we're like these all stars or anything, but it's like we need more people willing to produce their own original stuff that still carries the inspiration of, like, you know, decades past. Do something new and fresh with it, but it's like. You know, it's funny because a lot of these bands, like when they go on, they do those festivals, kind of like what I talked about earlier. It was like, it's like they, people just want to hear the classics. They don't, these guys don't put new albums out because no one wants to listen to new stuff. And that's a shame. And Winger is one of those bands that fell into that.
See, I don't know if, I didn't really follow Winger after their first album. So I honestly don't know if they're still putting stuff out or not.
You know, they are.
Well, I know they're touring, and I know that Red Beach is still with them, and he's their main guitar player, which is great. And man, that guy.
Yeah, you can't say enough about him. He's so good. And
he's very talented.
That did you ever see that live album that he did with Dokken? It was Live Under the Sun, I think.
No, I didn't see that one. I did see the one that he was playing with Whitesnake.
Live from the Sun, I think it's called, something like that.
You see the one with Whitesnake, right? Where he's playing with Whitesnake?
Yeah, where he's with what's his name? Doug Aldridge.
Yeah.
Oh my God, two monster guitar players.
Oh, it's great.
And you got Doug Aldridge. He's got a Les Paul, and he's doing all the crazy pentatonic shred stuff on it. You know, and it's like. When Doug Aldridge was in Dio's band, I mean, the stuff he was doing was just freaking nuts. I mean, I just, unbelievable. Some of the, they laid in, as part of his guitar solo, there's one, it's a guitar solo that will be, it's like a prelude to Shame on the Night, or kind of happens in between. They'll start out with it, which is a great song anyway, because, you know, it's got that really kind of laid-back intro, but it's still metal, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a drum groove that they throw in there, and it's the bassist and the drummer and him are, it's one of those signature Dio grooves, and it just, the guitar kicks in, and he's just making that guitar just wail. I mean, like, just monstrous, and every note is like perfectly placed for that rhythm groove they got laid down. And I'm just like, and it only lasts for maybe like 35 seconds, I rewind it, listen to it again, because it was so awesome.
You get riffs in that, like, they get stuck in your head.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, it's just, yeah, and it just makes you want to pick up a guitar and start writing your own stuff.
Well, I think that's good music, right? When it gets stuck in your head and it has a nice groove to it, or you can't get it out, minus, you know, commercials, because those are designed to try to get stuck in your head, right? Good or bad, but... and you and I have talked about this when it comes to writing, that creativity when you're writing something, you can write whatever you want, but if it's something that sticks, right, it's something that you can put your instrument down, whatever it is, and you can come back to it the next day and it's still fresh in your mind and it's still prominent there. You know, it's catchy. You know, it's something that's going to, you know, stick in your mind, even if you were to wait a week and not come back to it. Work with that, you know, run with that, versus things that are just kind of, I wouldn't say flat, but just very common,
right? Well, and that's the thing, is like, to write a good song that's going to stay in your head, it doesn't even have to, you're not even reinventing the wheel. You're just coming up with a good riff that's going to, like, hey, this is really, really awesome. You know, and you're not doing like freaking Nintendo Core or something like that, trying to be all off the wall.
Yeah, writing is definitely, it's its own technique. And stuff that you and I are doing, we're not only just writing stuff, we're trying to produce it, we're trying to mix it, we're trying to be, you know, the forefront of doing all that, which I have to give props to engineers, mixers, producers, and they all have a hat for a reason. And it's a lot of work. It's definitely a lot of work. But those good riffs, I think you want to try to hold on to those and run with those and try to make something of them. Take the time to do it. I think there's a lot of albums that people just put out fluff, right? Filler tracks.
Oh, sure.
Music that isn't... It's okay. It's not bad.
But it's driven by the record companies just to fill it out.
Right. So you want to... And this is just my perspective on it. I want to put out music that every track has something that's catchy. Everything that's in it is good, right? You're going to want to listen to every single track that you put out versus songs that are, you know, hey, we're going to talk about rainbows and unicorns.
Yeah, you reminded me of this. There's these two guys that's on YouTube, and they were talking about Eddie Trunk, where he's like, Yes, Eddie, we know you have the exclusive interview. The only one who's interviewed Vito Bratta in the last 20 years. This is the only place, the exclusive interview, you know, with Vinnie Vincent. That was the topic, was how he got to be the first guy to interview Vinnie Vincent for at like the Atlanta Kiss Expo or whatever it was. And this guy commented, he's like, yeah, you know, that's like saying you're the wheel greaser at the Special Olympics. You know? I heard it in the shower and I lost it.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Because I'm like, with those shower speakers, I was laughing. So this big hefty guy that's making all these comments.
Oh, that's hilarious. That is funny.
So it's like, yes, okay, we understand. Yes, you have the exclusive interview. You're the only person. And it's just, I love that kind of stuff. And these old bitter guys are like, it's like I was watching that, like Gene Simmons did that vault tour that he did. And he was trying to sell this vault. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it was like, it was $2,000 for the vault experience.
$2,000?
$2,000.
Wow. You buy a guitar for that?
Yeah. And not some cheap court base that has been stage used for 30 seconds.
That'd be a brand new PRS, right? Paul Reed Smith, or you buy a new ESP. Not that I'm, you know, pushing guitars or, you know, or equipment that I use, except for ESP. I'll plug it. I'm not only an owner, but I shamelessly promote it with shirts, because nice. I believe in their stuff. I mean, I exclusively use ESPs.
I only plug Chipsons. No, I'm just kidding. Ernie Ball's my lady. You know that I love that thing.
That's a nice guitar.
Yeah, the JP6.
That reminds me of those mysterious cars that have like that paint job that it changes color when you drive by it, right?
Yeah, like a Ford Mustang. They had the same kind of color
scheme. The Mystique color, right?
Yeah, that one's called Mystic Dream.
There you go. Had to be Mystic or Mystique in there. Yeah. Had to be. Had to be. It changes colors, right?
Exactly. And then it was funny because, like, Carvin, Carvin guitars or Carvin musical instruments out of California, they had these really cool, like, Tony McAlpine had a 7-string that was called, had a Harlequin prismatic paint job. So it was metal flake with that paint job. And it was like a, it looked like a Vegas paint job. It was just like really over the top. It was so cool, you know. And the paint job itself was like $500.
I keep getting you off topic. I'm sorry.
I do it to myself. Anyway, sorry. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing is like, with, I just think that there's so much good stuff out there. And I would encourage everyone to go out there and actually listen to some. You might be surprised. And you should listen to different styles of music anyway that you're not, didn't think you'd like, because you might at least learn something from it if you're interested in making your own stuff. And that's sage advice, you know. And it's like, I would encourage people just to get out and try and play an instrument, period. Even if,
go to a concert, right? Yeah. That you wouldn't have, or listen to things that you might not. And I know that, you know, I said earlier that I don't really listen to a lot of the newer stuff, but I mean, if that's what motivates you and you can find your groove and you find an inspiration from it, definitely go after it. Music is something to be, in my opinion, to be looked at and cherished. It's one of the 7 languages. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if most people know that or not, but it is a language in its own and also an art form.
And Klingon.
Yeah, if you can speak that, I don't.
I can.
I have no words. definitely get out. I mean, a lot of influence that I get, you know, besides my family and friends and, you know, obviously when you're really in a bad mood from work, you play more aggressively just because you're angry. But maybe for some people, I don't know, other people might. Find Zen.
I've written entire songs because of that.
But that's inspiration, right?
Yeah.
It just comes out. I listen to a lot of music from movies, right? I mean, I'm all in on John Williams. I will forever be a diehard, not just because I'm a Star Wars fan, minus The Last Jedi, which we won't bring up because I will go off on that for hours.
Steaming pile of diarrhea.
Sucks. But his approach to music, it motivates me. It gives me inspiration and ideas. And there's a lot of music out there that's like that. And a lot of people still listen to classical, Beethoven, you know, Bach. But if you find things that motivate you and that inspire you, that give you inspiration to do things, definitely hold on to that and seek that newness, you know, from newer music. I don't listen to the radio a lot. Just for the fact that it seems like it's a lot of the same stuff that's overplayed.
Locally, they've got that they've got that radio station here locally that plays nothing but hair metal.
Yeah, it's
so good.
95.3.
Oh my god!
I listen to it in the morning going to work, and they would play what I would consider maybe B tracks that people wouldn't know, right? And that,
oh, so great.
That to me is, that's what makes that radio station awesome to me.
Because the people running it know what's good.
It's not Van Halen every 10 minutes, you know? And I have an appreciation.
Or Bon Jovi or Def Leppard.
Right. I have an appreciation for that type of music, but when you can hear a track that you might not have necessarily heard, or they played,
they had a few bands. I had to look up who they are.
Exactly.
Because they were at the end of the 80s when there were so many of them.
Like, they played like
Kingdom, a band called Tangier.
Yeah. Kingdom Come was on there. And I'd ask some other people, have you guys heard of this band? And
and they were accused of being like a Led Zeppelin clone.
Rip off, right? Like they ripped some of their tunes off. I think one of them was pretty close to there. But they do play some of that stuff that you wouldn't normally hear on a radio station because it wasn't being pushed. Right, they'll play some of those B tracks or some of the songs off an album that weren't necessarily prominent, but they're awesome. They're fun to listen to.
It reminds me of like Eddie Trunk. It's like he's the only guy that would talk about a band like Angel. You know, Greg's a great guy. He only puts out a song, an album every 10 years. You know, he's a perfectionist.
Well, Eddie's one of those guys that knows these people, right?
Yeah, it's nobody else can.
So he's talking about like, yeah, you know, I live next door to this guy, and he puts an album out every 10 years. It's cool.
Yeah, I ran into the bass player of Crocus recently, you know. Yeah, it's like, there's so much good stuff out there.
Oh, there's tons. And I know there's even this year, there's a bunch of different bands that are putting stuff out. Tool's got a new album coming out. I know a lot of people don't necessarily get into Tool, but they create an interesting headspace kind of under their own.
I saw them live. It was interesting. All right.
It's
a
trip.
The best sound quality I've ever heard, though.
It's amazing.
My ears didn't ring after the concert.
They're great.
Because they dialed it in.
I personally like them. They have their own unique style to it. It's almost kind of, like I said, a headspace that they kind of suck you into with some of their music, especially live. If you hear their live DVDs, they extend some of their songs out, which is cool. Alter Bridge has got a new one coming out. The one that kind of blew me away a little bit was, you know, how Godsmack kind of has their unique sound, right, that they were doing for years and years. And then they released an album out, I think it was last year, maybe at the beginning of this year. And Sully had made the comment that, you know, they had kind of done that, so they wanted to kind of go in a different direction a little bit with some of their music. And they put pianos in some of their tunes. And I was just like, yeah, that's cool when they're striving to do something, you know, a little more bit unique depth, that still has some other sound to it and still has quality to it.
You know, it was interesting. We saw them live like 3 times, and all 3 times they gave you your money's worth.
Oh, they're performers.
They played every song, their entire catalog at their concerts. They didn't leave anything out.
No, they are definitely showmen. Showmanship is amazing. The fact that they're sounding just like their albums when they play, that's a big thing for me. It was something that was kind of passed on to my dad. My dad was, you know, spinning records of Boston and Heart.
Great stuff. Not Heart, but Boston.
Fleetwood
I'm not a
Mac
Heart fan.
I actually like Heart.
No, that's fine.
Well, it better be, or I'm leaving right now.
This interview is over.
It's over. Drop the mic. So he'd spin those records, right? And we went to a concert, and it was one of the very first concert I ever went to. It was at the Gorge, and the headliner was Queensrÿche, but Heart played before them. It was like an all-day event, right? Mm-hmm. And the one thing that stood out, my dad was like, you know what? Those bands sound exactly like their album do. They have that quality to them. It's not just a bunch of noise coming off the stage, right? And that kind of resonated with me. It was like, oh, so when you're in the studio, you can really come up with a lot of different things and make it sound exactly how you want. But then when you go to play it live, how are you going to do it?
Some people would argue, though, they don't want to hear the CD. They want to hear more of a...
the real tone to it, or the real raw music of it that's coming out. Yeah. And it's to have people say, well, they messed up a guitar solo or it didn't sound as good. To me, it's like, well, you're getting the human side of the music business at that point, right? You're not getting the prefabricated. You're in a studio. Let me record that part over 50 times and then take that one good take that I'm getting and throw it out there.
Yeah.
Which I also think is part of the music industry has changed, where when it went digital, they didn't have to sit and play a whole song all the way through every time they messed it up.
Right.
People like the Beatles, they'd have to play that whole song, and if they messed up, they'd start from the beginning, and everybody had to play it again. So you had to know that song.
Built-in rehearsal.
Yeah, yeah. Nowadays, it's a blessing and a curse, I think, for the digital age.
I wonder how expensive Abbey Road was.
Well, for the time, I don't know, 2 shillings.
2 shillings, nice. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is. Man, some of those recording sessions and stuff from some of the older bands, I mean, I wonder how many piles of coke are on the console with some of these things, you know? I mean, it's just, you know, like Steve Ray Vaughan, he would mix whiskey with his, you know, he'd have coffee with like freaking cocaine in it and stuff. I saw that Behind the Music, they were saying, I was like, that's crazy.
Was that guitar player from Wasp that was like really just... like drunk that, all the time?
Wasn't it Chris Jones? Was it Chris? Oh gosh. Here's the funny thing about that: Lita Ford was married to that guy, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't
for a long
that.
Time, and he kind of just, I guess, went off the deep end. I guess, you know, but they split up or whatever. But it was like some crazy stuff that happens behind the scenes. But yeah, because you were kind of talking about you know, how it sounds exactly like it is at a concert and everything. And one of the things that stood out to me when you said that was, like, I remember, like, you know, the Ozzy Osbourne album Just Say Ozzy, and
yeah,
they've got that live because it's a live album.
Mm-hmm.
And they got that live version of Shot in the Dark, and it's got It's got that extended guitar solo that Zakk Wylde does. And that was something where that's really when the guitar bug started biting me, when I was like, I want to play. I want to learn how to play. I'm going to do whatever I can just to get to figure it out.
So that was, you know, that was your moment in time where you're like, I want to do this. I want to be able to play. Or was there like a time before that?
There was a time before that, and I think it was it wasn't any one artist that did it. My earliest recollection of picking up a guitar and just bonding with it naturally in a matter of seconds was we had a music class when I was in high school, and
that was your avatar moment. You just, like, you know, linked your hair into the guitar, and yeah, you're like, you honed in. You're,
well,
one.
We all had a guitar, and it was those classical guitars or like Yamaha student guitars, and I started doing tricks on it. I'm like, hey, this is easy. I can do this. You know, I'm doing tapping and stuff. And I'm like, and next thing I know, all the kids are staring at me. They're like, what the heck is he doing?
Who's this Justin guy?
Yeah. I mean, it was like, I could just do it. I didn't even think about it. I'm like, this is easy, you know, moving up and down the fretboard, doing trills and, you know, just, I mean, it wasn't like mind boggling stuff, but I'm like, well, wait a second. This, if I do this, it sounds like this. Right. And then the teacher goes, all right, Elvis Presley, knock it off. It was pretty funny. And so she called me Elvis Presley. So it sounded like kind of like Heartbreak Hotel, I guess. But because I was going, da-da-da-da-da-da.
Oh, like, there you go.
If I move my finger this way, the note will go higher, you know?
Right.
So, and then fast forward, I think it might have been a couple years later. My brother and I had a childhood friend. Shout out to Josh Donaldson. I know you're listening. He had this, I think it was like the Finger Hut Sears catalog. He had this rock axe, and it was a black and white, like, you know, Strat copy. And I flipped it upside down, and I just, whenever I go to his house, I'd play it a little bit, just messing around on it and stuff. I'm like, I got to get one of these. So I asked for one for Christmas, and I got one, you know, just like it. And I flipped it upside down like Hendrix, you know. And first
you
thing
lefty,
I did,
you.
Yeah. And the first, and it's funny because I traded it to Ponch. I actually traded it to Ponch.
Really?
Yeah, I traded like, I must have traded like, I always traded like really, like, I don't know, stuff I probably shouldn't trade because I could probably, like, you know, I'd always regret it later, like, oh, I shouldn't have done that.
Well, now it's on to Ponch to write or make a comment and leave a comment to find out if he still has that or not, right?
Oh, I know it's gone. He should comment, like, whatever happened to it.
Like a big old short story or long story or whatever it was.
Yeah, a short narrative.
I hucked it for my comics.
Yeah.
Well, I got $5 for it, and I bought, like, 50 comics with it.
I think he might have traded it to a guy in college or something. And I'm still trying to get him to play an instrument. You know, I'm trying to get him to, because he loves music so much. I'm like, come on, dude, you played violin in high school. But I was like, that was my thing. And then the second guitar I ever got was that black Squire Strat that's over there. I scalloped the fretboard on it. It's the third one next to the bullseye.
Oh, I'm looking.
Yeah.
I see it. Yeah.
And I still have that. And that was my first real guitar, was that Squire Strat. And that was 21 years ago, you know. Got it for Christmas. And I bought it myself with a financial aid check from when I went to, like, junior college. And that was the money left over after I got my books and paid for all my classes. I went down to this place called Dr. Guitar in Watertown, New York, and bought it. Like, I want that. I took it right off the thing.
Nice.
And it just, yeah, I couldn't put it down, you know. So I'll never get rid of that guitar. It's got history to it. And it's old at this point to where, if you look at it, the finish is starting to relic on it.
Yeah.
And the paint is like, it'll, you know how the paint will do those, like, strips? It'll have those straight lines because the body's aging so much on it.
Yeah.
It's starting to do that now, and I'm like, that's pretty cool, you know? And so it's my workhorse. I mean, I've probably millions of hours on that thing. But, I mean, the thing is, like, for me, I guess really what got me started was that music class. I can't really say it was any one artist, but Eddie Van Halen was my thing, you know? And it wasn't that his playing was cool, but it was the riffs he did. It was his technique. It was the sound processing. It was, you know, David Lee Roth is like a super funny guy, you know, and everything. And just his music is great. But the thing was like, when I heard Yngwie Malmsteen, it was all over. It was, it took, jumped it up to a new level.
So like, I'm cashing my chips in, we're going all in.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was like, because I heard that song, there was a Guitar World, Guitars That Rule the World. It was a CD compilation of all, like, a bunch of different guitarists that came out, and it was, it, they produced that album in the early 90s. He did a version of this song called Leviathan, which was off the Fire and Ice album. And he, but he did a version for that compilation, a different version. It just, it was so heavy sounding. And I'm like, this guy's got a Strat and he sounds like super metal, you know? And it just, to this day, just blows me away, you know? And the whole intro of the song's piano. And then it's got his guitar sounds like a violin pretty much on it. And then he just starts shredding on the thing. And it's just so great, you know? And, you know, the thing is like, when I heard Hiroshima Monomura when he was with Alcatraz, I had another compilation album that I got from Big Lots, believe it or not.
Big Lots, oh, wow.
It was Metal, It's Alive, Volume 2. And they had a version of that on there. And it just, I heard his guitar shredding. I'm like, this guy's just playing a million notes here, but it sounds cool. It's got emotion behind it. And a lot of these guys have kind of waned quite a bit. Like, Satriani's not playing like he used to. Vi isn't playing like he used to. Malmsteen's not playing like he used to. You know who's still playing like he used to? And even better, or, like, even never let up, was Tony McAlpine. He is still, like, full tilt, 100%. Just amazing.
Yeah, he's talent, for sure. Well, you kind of know him through kind of practicing and lessons and stuff,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's an excellent teacher, because he'll just keep hitting you with it. I've been taking lessons from him for about, like, almost a year. And, you know, people are like, why are you taking lessons? You don't need to take lessons. And it's like, well, I want to get better. You can always get better. And
you never stop learning.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, who better to learn from than one of the greats, you know, who's still at the top of his game. And not only is this guy a great guitarist, he can produce. He produces his own stuff. He's the one that got me, like, back into reading sheet music again. And, like, he'd send me something in, like, standard notation. I just eat it right up, because I'm like, when I see printed sheet music, to me, it's like, I don't know, man, it's magical. I just, you know, I love it. I don't know what it is. I get sucked into it. When I see it, I can hear the music in my head as I'm sight reading it. You know, every dot, every quarter note, every time signature that's on there, I can hear it as I sight read it, you know. And it was one of those things where, like, when I learned how to do it, and when I was in, like, fourth grade, technically I was third grade when I started to read sheet music, but it was like, it's just a language, it's like its own thing, like you were saying. I mean, it's, and to read sheet music to me is just fascinating, and I can't get enough of it. And you know, it's just like, you can get into some real advanced stuff like tenor clef and things like that no one really is, unless you're playing like a saxophone or something, you know, you're not going to know that stuff. But I know we're going real deep here, folks, but this is what happens. But I mean, it was like, I just love sheet music. And like, we had one lesson where I'm like, he's telling me kind of how it's going. And then I was like, one of the songs he was doing, I could envision it on sheet music, the dotted notes. And everything, I could literally see it in front of me, you know, and as he's playing it. So it works in the reverse. You can hear something, and then you can see it as if it was written on standard notation. That's what I can do, you know. And it got me back into music again, full tilt, you know, because, like, my friend Ponch told me, like, he's like, hey, you should get in on these lessons, because, like, Tony McAlpine sent out a tweet. And, you know, he's like, I can do lessons again. And I'm like, I kind of was like, I don't know. I was kind of depressed, and I hadn't been playing for a while. And something in me is just like, you know what? You need to go do this. And so I put my name in, and I'm like, well, maybe, you know, there's only a few slots and I'm not going to hear anything back. It was a nice effort and everything. A week later, I get an email, you know, I get contacted saying, like, hey, these are the openings and everything. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is crazy, you know. And so I kind of just went full tilt with it. And I'm the kind of person that I'm motivated by someone really expecting a lot out of me. And it instills that fear of, like, healthy fear and motivation of, like, just make it happen. Do whatever you gotta do to get it done. And that's, I mean, my parents got me into music, like, in band in school, right? Oh, I got made fun of and stuff.
Oh, I never got into band in school.
It was a sit-down band. I wasn't in the marching band. It was the, we would do cool stuff, like the Superman theme, do movie themes and stuff. And we'd arrange it for horns, right? And we were more of a horn band. We weren't so much of, like, drums and stuff. We had a timpani, I think. And then we, like, the mallets. And then that was about it, though. I think we might have had some very light percussion, you know.
That's cool that you did that stuff, though. I mean,
well, that's how I learned how to read sheet music.
I never, looking back, I didn't do a lot of things when I was in, you know, in school. And trying to pull, you know, music, it was is definitely, you know, my parents' influence, you know, very different styles. My mom would listen to, like, ABBA, you know, Saturday Night Fever, that kind of stuff, right? And then my dad, whenever my mom wasn't home, was blasting the rock music. So getting into it for me was definitely, when I was a kid, I was a big fan, got the emotion about it, right? I was always pumped up listening to music. And then I tried to pick up guitar when I was in, like, fourth grade. And it was, my dad had a huge acoustic with huge strings on it. And he's just handing me a book. He's like, here, go and learn. Fingers hurt after, like, 2 days. And then I was done. Right. I'm like, yeah, this isn't for me. Then I tried again when I was in fifth grade. Same thing. You know, fingers didn't take to it. They were too small. They hurt too much. And then I think everybody gets more of an attachment definitely to music when they're in their teenage years, right? It's that emotional aspect of music that they can click with, they associate with. And that got me into it a little bit more. And my brother didn't just hand me a guitar. He's like, hey, can you play this thing over and over again? And I played it, and he's like, hey, you should learn guitar. You should seriously, like, think about learning and playing it. So that kind of got me into it. And then it influences the music that I was really into, because I was like, oh, man, I really like this song. How do I play it? So I didn't learn sheet music like you did, which I think is really cool about the fact that you kind of went and did that from the beginning and had that exposure to it.
Oh, sure.
So definitely kind of wish that I had gotten into that. But you know, everybody's journey is a little bit different. You can definitely tell the passion that comes out of the way that you play and your style and your approach to it is definitely, methodical, and you think a lot about it, which is cool. And a lot of people, I think there's a lot of different levels to their music style.
Yeah.
A lot of people, they play emotion, don't necessarily know the technicality of it, but they can play really well. There's the people that can play technical. And then there's the people that can kind of do both. And then there's the people that just enjoy music for what it is.
Sure.
And to find that blend, that ultimate blend, are people like you're saying, Steve Vai, Satriani. You know, they've got the technical down and they've got the emotion down to it when they're playing. And it's definitely one of those, you know, the holy grail of achievable for people that are not only passionate about music, but they really want to get into the depths of learning the technicality of it.
Well, and that's the thing is, like, I guess, you know, the reason my approach is like that is because I think it depends a lot on how someone's mind works. And, like, if you're going to learn stuff that's like jazz or fusion music or prog or whatever, it's all mechanical. It's mechanical. You can't play by feel. If you play by feel, you're going to lose it and it's going to fall apart. Now, if you want to go play, like, blues or, you know, like, blues stuff where it's, like, you can feel it. You're not counting the beat, but you can feel it and just groove to it. It's natural. When you get into complex meters and stuff, and, like, that's some of the stuff I was working on with the guitar lessons was, like, I was doing, like, Alan Holdsworth, like, UK stuff. And that kicked my butt because I never was mechanical about music, like, as far as counting like that. And, like, the material I got to learn, I figured, you know, I got the song down in about 10 minutes, you know, because I could feel the beat, but that's not the point. To get locked in to where you're tight, you need to count. And that helps you get to be precise. In that kind of music, you have to be precise. You can't be off at all. You have to be on your game. And so, I mean, that stuff goes way beyond pop music goes way beyond really this typical content of this podcast, for that matter. But that's the thing is, for me, it's an adventure, and it's I always need to have something I have to figure out, because I'm going to get bored. The great thing about music is you'll never have it all figured out as far as like different combinations of playing notes or chords or time signatures or combining instruments or whatever. You're never going to have it all figured out. At least that's my perspective.
No, I for me, I would agree with that 100%. But that's also kind of what drove me to the style of music that I like to play. The progressive rock side of things. It's not just straightforward all the time. Some of the...
Yeah, we were talking about before we were recording, yeah.
The timing.
Changing a key for a few
changing
bars.
Changing keys. Yeah. You're not just playing open chords or bar chords. You're really having to, think about what you're playing in the different styles that you're trying to play it in. And I'll go back to another thing that I love about music, especially guitar, and working with people in various bands I've been in, people that I've worked with. When you can blend your style with someone else's style, right? You get two guitar players, you're not necessarily playing the same thing, but you can blend those together and create something. It's just...
Wasn't it great when we joined forces on those songs and we get to hear them?
I'm a fan of my own music, and it's not, I'm not saying that because I'm egotistical. I am far from it. I enjoy it to listen to it because I get that emotion out of it. Like when I was a kid, when I first started listening to music, when I first started getting into it, it reminds me of the times when my dad was playing, Journey or, the harder rock music in the records, or even the Beatles. You know, I'd be jumping up on their bed, just having a good time. And when I hear that music and get that excitement from it, that's when I know it's like, yeah, you know what? I really enjoy it. So I am kind of a fan of my own stuff because I get that emotion out of it again.
Sure.
And even creating it. And I think you've seen me kind of go off on tangents after we get done recording bits and pieces where I get really amped up about music and, and can't talk enough about it or come up with these creative ideas and try to bounce them off of you. I think that's the key takeaway for me on writing and working with other people, and the enjoyment that I get out of playing music. I write stuff on my own. I really enjoy collaborating with people that have talent and have a mind and have an ability to look at things in a slightly different way to challenge me.
It helps.
But yeah, at the same time, be cohesive enough that you're creating something and creating something good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's the thing is there's a lot of people that aren't capable of doing that because of egos, or maybe their styles just aren't compatible. Maybe they just, it just doesn't click, you know? And I think that part of that working is being able to have similar backgrounds and what inspires you. And I would think that two guys that, you know, that were like, you're a huge Queensryche fan. I'm a Dream Theater fan. But I also like the more, like the shred guys, you know? But I don't play 90 miles an hour all the time, you know, because I feel that the technical facility on the instrument is best, it's put to its best use when it serves what the song's trying to do.
Absolutely. Right to the song, right?
Exactly.
Don't try to go so far out.
Because then it becomes obnoxious. And people are like, oh, this guy's hot dogging or whatever. But man, if you could take a cool solo and give it purpose and give it emotion, oh, there's nothing. It's the icing on the cake. And this country, the United States of America, needs to get back to real musicianship. And even if it's on a commercial level, that's fine. But I would rather have it be like that than be this underground thing that... Because it's like, when stuff like that happens, that means the general public isn't aware of it and they're not really interested in it. That's a horrible thing for a musician, because it's like, you're sitting there playing your heart out and they don't care. You're just background to them. And it's like, I've had situations where like I've played out live and stuff, and people are like, they treat you like a jukebox, you know?
Well, I think that's kind of radio at a point, right? It's kind of a jukebox for what they think you want to hear, or what they think is going to be popular, or, you know, the up-and-coming artists that they do. But there is, to loop it back, there's a ton of music out there, and there's a lot of people that don't go noticed that write really, really good stuff. Take a chance on it. Go out there, find it, look for it.
Well, here's something to drive you nuts about that is, like, think about all the bands you're never going to hear that you would like, and you're never, because there's so many that if you were to hear them, you're like, think of it this way. Think if you had the ability to say, you know what, I want to hear every band that I know I would ever like. Never going to get there.
There's just
that drives me insane.
There was a band that I was lucky enough to do. I call it the mini tour, because we played here, we played Yakima, we played in Seattle, and it was like a 2-day stint. So it was a lot of shows in a short amount of time, and we got to know them really well. It was a band called Tempercast, and they were just musicians trying to write and try to get noticed, and it was, to me, almost a shame, because I thought they had just a massive amount of talent.
Did you guys open for them?
Yeah, we did. We got an opportunity to open for them. They didn't have egos, which was also great. You know, they were very much the hey, you're musicians, you're trying to write music, you know, just like we are. I got to jam out one of their songs with them on stage, which I thought was probably one of the funnest moments I think I had with them, when you get invited up to play their originals, not somebody that's in the mainstream originals, but their originals, and have a good time with it. But there is a lot of good music. It's not dead. Seattle scene is still going. Music all over the place is still going. They just don't get as much notice because, like you said, radio is kind of catering to money. It's business. It's not about, you know, what you and I would consider musicians and music.
Yeah, the art doesn't matter to them. It's just the dollar signs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be nice if that would turn around, but I don't see that happening, unfortunately.
Well, the good news is that people like you that do podcasts, and other podcasts, Mixos, it's an outlet for these people to get noticed, for people to take a chance on it. And I know that, you know, at the beginning of your podcast, we have one of our songs that we've done. And
which I take a lot of pride in the fact that we have our own stuff. We don't have to take it from somebody.
There's no royalties, right? I don't have to pay for it.
Right.
But at the end, you know, one of the things that I liked is, you know, you'll throw even your own stuff on there, or even stuff that is original stuff at the end if people want to listen to it and take that chance and then get that feedback. Because it's one thing to put something out there that you know everybody in the world is going to like it because it's catchy or it's prefabricated, and it's a completely different feeling when you're opening yourself up emotionally in a song and writing it, and then you stick it out there for everybody to absorb and then try to take it in and then get that feedback, negative or positive, right?
Yeah, and I would challenge anyone who has a negative comment for anyone's music is like, let's see you do better.
That's, you know, some people probably could, you know, depending on
doing
on the platform. I think the thing is getting it out there and putting yourself out there is also another challenge, that if you can overcome that and get to the point you're like, you know what, I'm proud of what I've done. People like it, don't like it. I mean, you can make that argument about any music, I guess, in essence, you know.
Or someone ridiculing anything in period. It's like you could be some obnoxious turd in a stands at a baseball game, and then he's heckling who's ever up to the plate. You know, he's got two strikes, you know, and he finally hits a triple or whatever, and it's like the guy would be like, I could have hit a home run first at the first pitch. It's like, let's see you get up there, Tubbs. Let's see you go do that.
Yeah, get out there and try.
You know? Yeah, let's see you try and get the first base without passing out. You know, everyone's got an opinion.
Sure.
Right. Let's see them get out there and do better.
I think for me, I also think, you know, because we've had a lot of conversations, it's the people that give respect for the fact that it is hard to write music at times, right? It is hard to pull ideas out. It is hard to get something.
Depending on what you've got going on in your life, I tell you, the stuff I got in the hopper right now, which I previewed on the Twitter page, on my personal page, that was just the verse. And it was like, I did that in a matter of, I laid that whole thing down in like 10 minutes, but it happens sometimes in spurts like that. But I tell you, it's a real slog. It is a real slog.
Because you don't want to sound like anybody else. You want your own style to it. And you want it to be you, and you want it to be authentic, and you don't want it to be just something slapped together and thrown out there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So there's it, there's something to be said, I think, about that honesty in when it comes out in that music, and being able to take that criticism or even the positive that you can get from it, and you know, not necessarily take it to heart, but know that, you know, there are some people, like, I'm not a huge Nirvana fan. I know there's a ton of people out there that were, but I have an appreciation for the fact that it's music, it's art, it's something that they came up with, something that they created on their own, right? I can respect that, and it's that goes with all types of music. I can respect that they're trying, but it really, really putting yourself out there and accepting it's another level, I think.
After this conversation, I have to listen to Stone Temple Pilots now.
Core, one of the best albums, I think, that came out of the 90s that was amazing.
Do you like Tiny Music?
From the gift shop or whatever, the second album they had?
Oh, was that the second one? There was Core. There was...
What was it? I think it was like the Tiny Music from
Tiny Music is awesome. I love that one. But
It's good. It had Vaseline on it.
That's Purple.
Oh, that's right. Purple. See, I'm off.
And Purple's awesome, too. Wicked Garden's one of my favorite songs that they ever
did. That's a great tune.
Oh, my gosh. Wicked heavy riff, mm-hmm. man. I mean, oh, man. The DeLeo brothers are so great, you know. And for those of you that aren't familiar, Dean DeLeo and Robert DeLeo, they're the bassist and guitarist for Stone Temple Pilots. And it's unfortunate what happened to Scott Stapp. You know, he had a lot of issues and stuff, substance abuse and things. And
that's Creed, dude.
What's that?
That was Creed.
What'd I say?
Scott Stapp.
Sorry, Scott Weiland. I'm getting tired now. Of Velvet Revolver fame. Scott Stapp had a falling out, and I don't know what he's doing now, but he did some solo work on some films, I think.
Yeah, and they had, Creed came out with another album. I think this was back in like 2007 or 8, I think. And then after that, they kind of disbanded again.
Because an Alter Bridge happened.
Yeah. Which I'm a huge fan of Alter Bridge.
You know, Tremonti, he's a big Paul Gilbert fan. You know, he's like the world's biggest Paul Gilbert fan.
Another fun fact for anybody that's still listening to this podcast, because we've been ranting. the lead singer for Alter Bridge is from Spokane, Washington.
Miles
Kennedy.
There you go.
Yes, one of their albums, they have a song called Coeur d'Alene, and that's up near Idaho.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So
I was just up there a few months ago.
Oh yeah, 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 that's right. Yeah, you never know where you're going to find a next musician.
Right. You know, it's funny, you remind me, like, who the hell's John F. Kennedy? You know,
who, flux capacitor.
Well, another fun fact, here you go, is that the guy that said that on Back to the Future, he's the voice of Hordak.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He passed away, I mean, some time ago, but, Diane, another one of these kids is right in front of my car. when you hear that, you can almost hear a little bit of Hordak in there. Which is great, you know, and a little Master of the Universe, Princess of Power trivia for you. See, we threw some toy nerdery stuff in here.
Oh, it's all over. I said John Williams earlier for Star Wars.
So. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's Ben doesn't like my 3 3/4 inch Pimp Daddy Snoke figure I got on the wall. You're like, oh, my God, Justin. Last Jedi movie sucked.
Do I have to say that, you know, someone comes up with some great ideas and leaves it open-ended, and someone just comes along and for lack of better term, just takes a dump all over every single one of those ideas. Run, and just, hey, here's something cool. You know what? I don't care. You know what? We're going to take a kid and make him grab a broom, start sweeping with it, because he just magically knows how to use the Force.
Makes it float or whatever.
I don't know.
In the whole casino scene, that was not necessary.
There's a whole other podcast on that. Those
fart blossom animals they're racing or whatever, you know.
I just don't get the point.
You don't even have Rose in the movie. You don't need her in the film.
You don't need half of the movie. Okay, let's just go to this. You don't need the movie.
That's
you
true.
Could probably throw it out, and I'm hoping J.J. Abrams.
So you would retain honestly, the Shamrock Shakes?
Dude, Rey's going to wake up. It's all a dream. That's a nightmare that she just fell into that cave. Yeah, all that was just a nightmare. So all that stuff.
So Luke Skywalker's not dead is what you're saying.
Is he really?
I don't.
He's not dead in my heart, okay? I'm just saying.
Neither is Han Solo, right?
Hey, I love you. I know.
Luke Skywalker, the actor Mark
Hamill?
I was going to say Mark Pillow.
Yeah, I think we're going to wrap the podcast up here pretty soon.
We're getting pretty hairy here, because not to be confused with Nuclear Man. Oh, man. No bearing on Star Wars at all.
Imagine that, Nuclear Man pulling a lightsaber.
There's a John Williams connection there, you know. Even though he didn't do the Superman 4 thing, he did the original theme, so.
Yeah.
Sidney Fury did the, I think he did the Superman 4, which I have the double disc set on that.
Quest for Peace.
That's right.
Peace of mind.
I really like that movie. No one does. It's picked up traction, though, because people are starting to like, you know what?
It's nostalgic.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I rented it a couple times when I was in fifth grade.
See, I was nostalgic. I dated myself. It originally in 87, so I never lost it. You know, it's always been there. That's been my point this whole time. It's 30 years.
You can't erase it. It happened.
Yeah, it's on HBO.
This happened, whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Just like The Last Jedi. Damn it, I keep going back to that.
That is one of those films that I just, it's the only one where I think, like, I shouldn't really say that. I'm not going to, because I don't want to, that's one thing. Everyone's entitled to their opinion. You like something, you like something. If you don't, you don't, and that's cool. I can roll with that. But I think 9's going to be, it's going to be really playing off of the old canon heavily. And, I had really high hopes for the Kylo Ren character. And he had a really strong start in 7.
I think he did. I think every character in 7 had a strong start.
Yes.
I think.
I wanted Finn to start training in the Force. Because remember we picked up Rey's lightsaber and, like, it played that music and you're like, wait a second.
Was the flashback from the original sound. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Once again, John Williams. I'll just say it. Love what he does. It's going to be a shame because this is his last one he's doing. He's not doing any more Star Wars movies.
Well, for crying out loud, he's got to be like 90.
Yeah, I'm gonna have.
He is Yoda. At this point.
Yeah, that guy. I'm gonna have a whole six pack if that guy passes away. I'm gonna go. You can't console me when that guy goes because he's six
pack and a pound of bacon.
I still remember reel to reel. Talk about pirating back in the 80s, right? I know the movie came out in 77. I get it. Okay. I was a year old. So forgive me when my dad takes a tape player, puts it in the homemade popcorn bag to the movie theater and records it for me. So I can go home.
Wait a second. So did he just get the audio or did he have like one of those camera or shoulder mounted cameras?
There wasn't cameras at the time. It was just straight audio, right? Take it home, two sides, my dad in the middle of the movie, of course, you know,
click.
It stopped, and I'm like, you know, you do that quick look around, I'm like, oh, did anybody hear that? Hopefully not. Just flip the tape over, get it in as quick as you can, and record it. Love the fact he did that for me. Yeah, that's how hardcore, well, because they didn't have, you know, DVDs or videotape VHS at the time. It was, you waited till the movie came back out again in the theater, right? So... Yes, I know. I dated myself again.
It's okay.
And anybody here listens to this podcast still, I know we're ranting again. If you can guess my age and write it on there and leave the comment below, kudos, because I'm not going to tell you, but I'm sure you could probably guess pretty close.
Unfortunately, I was 2 years old when Return of the Jedi came out, so I have no memories of Star Wars from the early 80s, other than I knew a kid that had a lot of the toys and then had the lightsaber that would make sound if you were waving it through the air, would pass through the handle.
Yeah, absolutely.
There were no electronics. It was just a woo, woo. Yeah, so. I think we're going to wrap it up there. I think we've gone a pretty long stint. We didn't get the jam out tonight, but that's okay.
Hey, there's good music coming. Definitely stay tuned. Hey, I'm gonna have a, I think SoundCloud. I'll put some stuff out on there pretty soon.
There you go.
And Justin and I are definitely still working. Justin's working on one of his own songs. It's coming along, which is really cool. So he, not that he shoves me off to the side and puts baby in a corner or any of that kind of stuff, but we still are gonna collaborate and put new music out. So stay tuned. I'm sure he'll play it on the podcast, and we'll definitely get it out there for anybody that wants to enjoy the headspaces that we're creating.
Yeah, put that Danzig song out there. I really like that one.
Was that Mother?
No, but it doesn't even sound like Danzig, but it reminds me of Danzig because it's the attitude behind it.
Oh, the feel?
I love that. It's great. It's got some hair on it. It's good stuff.
Well, thanks for having me here.
Yep.
Paul, I want that video. I'm wrapping it back up full circle here, buddy.
Yeah. As my voice is cracking, I just hit puberty. Anyway, guys, it's been a hoot. And that was the chair, not me. Anyway. Anyway.
And with that, good night.
Yeah. So, Ben, thanks a lot for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I hope to show up again one of these days and keep ranting about good stuff.
You're not banned, so you'll be back.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Back at the woodshed that is Casa the Case.
Castle Case.
I got nothing.
Yeah. Anyway, you guys, check us out on Twitter, iTunes, and we'll have an Instagram page started soon, and we will see you next time. Have a good one.